Welcome, everyone, to our first conference call of 2018. Steve, welcome back from Cartagena. How was your trip?
Spectacular. I got to spend 10 glorious days at the beach in 85-degree weather and low humidity.
What did you do there?
Well, mostly I sat at the beach and looked at all the people under the umbrella drinking my Diet Cokes and visiting with the family. There were 10 of us, including my in-laws, nieces, and nephews.
Now, Steve, I've known you for 10 years. What else did you do? I know you can't just lie around.
You know, Nora, that's a good point. As usual, I was thinking about and formulating the SFP investment strategy for 2018 after coming off a very successful 2017.
And any conclusions?
Well, as a matter of fact, I thought not only about the investment strategy, but about Bitcoin and Oxford.
Wait, Oxford? I thought the program was finished already.
Yeah, the original program is gone, and what a sad day that was for me. Do you realize I've been going to Oxford for 10 years now? The experience was incredible. Not only did I learn a lot and made a bunch of new friends, but it made me a much better money manager. However, a new program run jointly with Business School Lausanne has formed, and not only will I be going to Oxford, but Geneva as well.
Wow, that sounds exciting. Tell me more.
Well, as you recall, I've been talking about social impact and sustainability investing, and you may have read about the iPhone controversy in the recent Wall Street Journal article. Both of these are related to one another.
Can you explain? I'm a bit confused.
Well, the Wall Street Journal reported today that JANA Partners has created a fund that will invest in sustainable businesses, because they think that those businesses should perform better over time than companies that have poor corporate citizenry. At the same time, the journal reported that Apple has a social responsibility to discuss smartphone addiction with teenagers. This is very new and very disturbing.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, some researchers believe that teenagers are becoming social dysfunctional due to their high usage of smartphones. I sometimes wonder that about my wife. In other words, kids are becoming depressed, socially dysfunctional, and suicidal. JANA Partners and the California State Teachers Retirement Pension Fund wrote a letter this week to Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, to ask him to conduct research on this topic and to open a discussion.
Interesting, but what does that have to do with sustainability investment, Oxford, and investments?
Well, believe it or not, all of these are related to one another. For one thing, I learned a long time ago that companies that practice good management usually produce superior results over time. You know, this was really reinforced to me at Oxford. Oxford is on the cutting edge of sustainability investing, and over there I learned how to evaluate sustainable investments better than I ever did before. One reason I kept going back was I kept learning new tools and techniques that give our portfolio performance a competitive edge, and sustainability is one of them. We've been incorporating sustainability and good corporate governance in our research methodology over the past few years, but now we've accelerated the process, and I think because of this Apple situation, we're going to have to do that even more. You know, sustainability means much more than social and environmental issues. This isn't just about tree huggers in the Sierra Club. It examines what factors a company that has that it can make long-term and sustainable business practices. This is where I think some of our investors may be confused. Good businesses are sustainable businesses if they are good corporate citizens, and they should perform well over time. I think we've become better stock pickers because of it. Now, like JANA funds, larger funds are picking up the idea, but we came to the party early. They are late.
Steve, it looks like Katie has a few questions. Katie?
Anything interesting happen while you were in Cartagena?
Well, as a matter of fact, yes. Free enterprise is blossoming in Cartagena more so than the United States. Let me give you some examples. No need for Uber in Cartagena because taxis are cheap and there are a ton of them always available. The bus system is privately run and efficient. Fares are cheap and buses go to most places. You don't need 50 permits to open up a restaurant, just one. No hotel taxes like here in California, which is now approaching 25%. Street vendors don't need permits by the city council. The airport is sleek, modern, and well-run, all privately operated with no TSA but private security instead. In contrast to the city of Los Angeles, where it would take 2 years and 23 permits to open a car wash.
While you're away, some clients were asking about Bitcoin again. Has your opinion changed about it?
Are you kidding me? You've got to be crazy. My opinion hasn't changed one bit. I'm against them, and my opinion against them has got even stronger. For one thing, Bitcoin isn't an investment. It is gambling. I have mentioned that fact in my special report that we published as a newsletter on Bitcoin in November. Bitcoins are manufactured out of thin air using a technology called blockchain. Although Bitcoin code will limit the number of Bitcoins to 21 million, other cryptocurrencies can manufacture as much as they want. There are no less than 120 cryptocurrencies now competing in the marketplace. I saw a great movie called Tulip Fever on the airplane coming home. Although the movie is a love story, it takes place during the time of another mania, the Tulip Mania, that occurred in Holland in the mid-1600s. A long time ago, I read a book called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and Madness of Crowds by Charles McKay. In the book, it talked about the Tulip Mania that occurred and how prices were being bid up to extraordinary levels by purchasing tulip bulbs. The rare bulbs, which had various colors, went for astronomical prices until the bubble burst. No exchange of the tulip was needed, just like no exchange of the Bitcoin is required now. Early trading in the COB futures market suggests that there is a speculative frenzy going on, with one contract going for $2,000 above the spot price. Liquidity and accurate market quotes are questionable because of the fly-by-night exchanges.
What else can you tell us about Bitcoin?
Well, this morning, South Korea outlawed Bitcoin on its exchange, and the Bitcoin market went haywire, with prices fluctuating as much as 40%. Recently, Bitcoin exchanges had system failures and price differences as much as 25%. Hackers have stolen Bitcoins, with the recent heist of $46 million being stolen on the Slovakian exchange. Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are highly susceptible to fraud and manipulation because they're unregulated. It is an unregulated market that depends on nothing. Yes, Bitcoin is an innovation in blockchain technology, but the tulip futures innovation in 1636 did not prevent the market in tulips from crashing in 1637. Today, the Wall Street Journal reported that the Chinese government is reducing the amount of electricity that Bitcoin miners can use. To mine Bitcoins, a miner needs lots of computer power and lots of cheap electricity. Bitcoin miners depend on cheap computer power and cheap electricity to make new Bitcoins virtually out of cyberspace.
Does this concern you?
Well, of course it does. As I said in my November Bitcoin report, the incredible surge in the price of cryptocurrencies dwarfs any previous price bubbles by a wide margin. I asked myself, is Bitcoin a store of value? Well, I'm not sure, since it's not backed up by anything. It's not like gold that's backed up by bullion or stocks or bonds with company assets, or currencies even backed up by the government. The Bitcoin crash could impair those who borrowed to purchase Bitcoin or cause a panic so large that it affects the psychology of other investments. As is usually the case with bubbles, investors of Bitcoin will say this time is different. I doubt it.
Steve, let me go ahead and interject here. Since I work with the portfolios too, I'd like to hear your views on the outlook for 2018.
Well, I have to say we've come off a great 2017. I think that 2000 should be good too, although the market is getting a little stretched here. I mean, the market is not cheap from a quantitative and qualitative perspective.
Now, when you say stretch, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think it's stretched more than any kind of Lululemon yoga pants. From a quantitative perspective, the market is more expensive now than any other time since 1929, and that includes the dot-com bubble of year 2000. From a qualitative perspective, the market can go up from here, even though the valuation is high, if some conditions persist for a while.
And what are those conditions?
Well, for one, if we remain in a low inflation environment with relatively low interest rates, and if there isn't a systemic blow-up like year 2008 from Bitcoin, or if the Chinese economy doesn't experience a severe market downturn.
Yeah, but what's the likelihood of any of that happening?
Well, it can occur at any time. Anything can happen. But I don't think any of those scenarios pose a problem with the exception of one problem, and that is rising interest rates.
Why are you so concerned if interest rates do rise? Is it because they're so low?
Yeah, that's the point. Interest rates are rising from such a low point, there's only one way to go up at this time, and that is up. When rates are at such a low point, any rise has magnifying effects and has even more of an impact. In most of the past market declines, the vast majority of them have been caused by a rise in interest rates. The cause for the end of this bull market will be no different.
Do you have a magic number on the interest rate?
Is that the magic number or the movie Magic Mike? Oh, okay, the magic number. The Fed will be most likely raise interest rates three times, maybe four times in 2018. I got that information from BCA, our research colleagues in Montreal, and I concur with them that if inflation is higher than what the Feds expect and surprise them, we could have a notch of four times of interest rates in 2018. So therefore, that would put the 10-year at 3.5 to 3.75%. And my number is actually a little lower, probably about 3.25%.
Steve, you've spoken of inflation. The only places I see it is when I go shopping or when I go to the baseball game. Can you explain that for us, please?
Yeah, sure. When most people think of inflation, they think of it happening in goods and services, the things people buy and use every day. However, true inflation also happens in asset prices. And we've had a lot of asset price inflation in the past couple of years. Look at stocks, look at real estate, look at commodities. Lately, inflation in goods and services has heated up because of the pricing pressures in commodities and materials, wages, an economy that is running at full capacity. One of the reasons that goods inflation has stayed low for the last 10 years is because of cheap goods coming out of China. China has suppressed goods inflation, but that is ending because Chinese labor manufactures so many of our goods, and China is no longer cheap. Vietnam, Myanmar, other countries that are in Southeast Asia are much cheaper. I think the Fed will be surprised in the next few months to see how strong it really inflation is. And, of course, they'll be behind the eight ball and have to raise rates faster and more frequently than they thought.
Now, when do you think that would happen?
That is what will choke off the stock market. I think that in late 2018 or 2019, but that's only my guess.
And at that point, what's our strategy going to be?
Well, we're looking at the strategy now about how we should kind of reduce risk in the portfolios, and that is always a moving question. And we will be able to do that if I see some of the signs or flashpoints. But for right now, it's steady as she goes as we move into 2018. An interest rate rise shouldn't dampen the stock market until the 10-year bond approaches what I think I said earlier was 3.25%. Until then, the corporate earnings backdrop will remain supportive for at least the first half of the year, and the recently enacted tax cuts that are beneficial to some but not beneficial to others will also help corporations. Let me just put a side note in there. As corporations experience cheaper tax cuts, they'll spend more on capital expenditures, which will employ more people, which will give those people employed more opportunities to spend money. Part of the problem where the economy hasn't performed as well as expected in prior recoveries is because people were paying off debt and not spending their money. Nonetheless, I expect 2018 to be a transition year. If stocks and bonds have entered the late inning, then we must watch closely for these flashpoints that I mentioned early to reduce the allocation of stocks. There's no reason why we should give up all the gains that we've had for the last several years, but the time for that is not yet. So we're remaining at our current asset allocations for now.
I think you're right about Bitcoin, but what about gold? Do you like it?
Well, I do like gold. I think gold is attractive at these prices for two reasons. One, I think that gold is a store of value, and two, in the past, we've used gold as a portfolio protector. I anticipate that we may use gold as a portfolio protector once again because it will help hedge the downside of all the portfolios. But I'm on the fence about buying it right now. For one, the U.S. dollar has declined significantly in the past 2 years, but gold has not significantly gone up. Usually gold goes up when the dollar goes down. Something's very wrong here, and I'm troubled by that. Second, if the U.S. dollar rebounds and interest rates also go up, then there could be a toxic brew for gold. In the short term, gold doesn't look appealing. But if inflation breaks out, or the U.S. dollar declines, or the euro increases in value, then gold may be an option for us, especially as used for a portfolio protector.
The last newsletter you mentioned you like Europe, Japan, and China as places to invest. Since coming back from vacation, do you still feel the same way about investing in those countries?
Yes, I like Japan because the valuations are much more reasonable, but you have to hedge the currency. We like stocks like Shiseido and DXJ. I also like China, but I'm also wary of a downturn there, so I'm waiting and watching. Things trouble me in China, especially internet censorship and the rise of the new president there who's trying to squash foreign businesses. I also like Europe, and we do have a decent European exposure with companies such as Vodafone, Glaxo, Elbit, Checkpoint, and Novartis. As we reduce our U.S. exposure in the coming months, we will be looking at Japan, China, and Europe, but we will also be looking at other countries for their bonds. For a short period of time, we have not bought foreign bonds and kept mainly to the U.S., and this was a great strategy. Our bond portfolio has performed very well. But as interest rates go up, there's opportunities in other countries that link their currency to the dollar, and we're going to take advantage of those to get higher interest rates in bonds.
I did notice that we do have a good number of international stocks.
Well, yeah, we do. And I've always looked at borders as artificial. However, when looking at stocks outside the United States, an investor must consider economic, political, and currency risk, something I always do. But we've assembled a nice portfolio, and I think it's prudently managed, and we don't take outside risk. I think that the portfolios are really at the nice sweet spot of allocation, where we've taken the appropriate amount of risk for where we are in the economic and business cycle. What I don't want to do is to take outsized risks and put any kind of hole in the portfolio where we would have a large loss. So I think at this point, the asset allocations have spoke for themselves in 2017, will speak for themselves in 2018. And Arash, I look forward to working with you and Katie in scheduling the performance reviews with the clients because this year they're going to be very happy.
Thank you so much, Steve. This was very informative. We will now take questions that you may have, and I am unmuting the lines.
The conference has been unmuted.
The lines are unmuted. Steve? You may ask now.
Hello?
Hey, Steve. It's Karen.
Hey, Karen. How you doing?
Good. Great presentation, as always. I was wondering what you thought of the pot stocks.
Oh, well, geez. We had one of our clients was who's really into pushing me to buy those. So we actually investigated a lot of marijuana stocks over the last 3 months, and you know we came to the conclusion that even though marijuana is legal, I think in 30 present administration is going to go after them. Not going to allow state law to conflict federal law. So we've been really wary about buying them. I'm glad we did because the other day these stocks collapsed. And, Attorney General Jeff Sessions that they are going to go after and enforce federal law in regards to marijuana. Next question. Next question.
Hi, Bill Evans, Steve.
Hey, Bill. Happy New Year.
Sounds like you had a tough time in Cartagena. Sounds fun. My question is about the oil business and about, you know, deregulating and the pipeline. And you can see that Exxon certainly moved up in stock value and so on. How are you feeling about the overall impact of energy stocks in the United States now with this tax cut, cutting corporate taxes? How do you think all that, how do you feel about all that stuff that's going on?
Well, I think the tax cuts were CapEx spending, capital spending. Oil stocks have gone up because the demand for oil is there, and the OPEC has made their production cuts. I think long after we're dead, oil may not be a, but in our lifetime, oil and oil stocks are going to be a great investment. It's interesting to note that Russia, Rosneft, which is the Russian largest Russian oil company, is starting to buy shale oil companies in the United States. So I think in the short, medium term, oil's got a good promise. I think oil is now at roughly $63 a barrel. It'll probably hit $75 a barrel at the end of 2018. So we're actually very bullish on oil. Exxon is my favorite.
Thanks.
Next question.
Anyone else?
Go ahead, Bill.
Next question.
Stephen, it's Daniel. How are you?
Good. How are you, Dan?
Okay. Got a question.
Yeah.
How many people in California are going to basically have effective tax entry under the new tax code? What your opinion is on the best in the world? California got me down. Could bring the whole economy down with it?
No, I don't think so. But what I think could happen is other countries in the world cut their taxes down too to compete with us, and that could set off actually a global. Huge global expansion. I think the problem for California with the tax cut that see some high earners state and go to other states and leave a nation that earns less than those who earn more, and that could impact California's budget. I think, you know, as is, the California budget is fairly balanced. But if California is back to their ways of spending all their money and then don't save for the future, California could be in trouble.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Hey, Steve, it's Russ Goodman.
Hey, Russ.
Are you getting any closer to seeing some of the artificial intelligence and robotic companies that you think justified investment, or do you still think they're too expensive?
Well, no, we're still looking at AI. Been looking at AI since, and we're pretty close to making some investments here. But we would like to see a little market correction, and I think we're going to have a temporary market correction of up 10%, and that's when the time we'll go in and buy some of those stocks. We have a list already.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Steve, it's Saul. As always, tell me about telephone companies if you can.
Okay, well, we love Vodafone, paying a great dividend. And, they have a good market position in Europe, and they're expanding in India and Africa. We're starting to warm up to Verizon, believe it or not, because Verizon's transforming itself telephone company into an internet company with the acquisition of AOL and Yahoo. Telephone, which is AT&T, we're still on the fence about because it looks Trump administration doesn't want to approve the merger with Time Warner. And that would leave it very vulnerable. So we're still on the fence with that one.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Well, thank you very much. I look forward to seeing you all very shortly when I come up by to performance reviews. I got a whole stack of Starbucks coffee cards. We can go and get coffee, and I'll see you. Thank you. Have a happy new year, and thank you for all your confidence.
Thanks a lot, Steve, and everybody.
Thank you, Steve.
Happy new year, everybody.
Thank you.
It was great. See you.
Thank you, Steve.